You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Welcome into the CHGO Blackhawks podcast presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up and you'll get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hi, I'm Jay Zawoski. We got Craig Boyson and Mario Tirabassi with us here on Throwback Thursday. I know I'm going to butcher the intro because I'm so excited to get to I have been waiting all week for this. I am so excited. So real quick, make sure you're following the show on Twitter at CHGO_Blackhawks. Make sure you're following the three of us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Zawoski. He's at Greg Boyson. And Mario is at Mario_Tirabassi. What else? Oh, yeah. Make sure you like and subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Smash that like button.
Yeah, smash it. Do it. And wherever you get your podcast, hit that subscribe button. And we would really love a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to do us a nice little favor towards the end of the week here, that would be a huge benefit to us and to CHGO. Those things are like gold for podcasters. So it is Throwback Thursday. Today's topic, the 2013 series against the Red Wings that went to Game 7. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Probably we're going to get to it. My favorite single moment of the dynasty happened in this series.
Yeah, I think outside of a cup clinching goal, probably the best goal of that run. Like, just the timing, the person, the significance behind it. Fantastic.
We're talking about Michael Frolik's penalty shot, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's my favorite GIF of the Dynasty era.
Yeah, no, the original was fantastic, and then whoever inserted all the musical instruments. Have you ever seen that version of it? That one is great. Like
Pavel Datsyuk, the accordion.
Yeah, and like Henrik Zetterberg's got a tuba for some reason. It's fantastic. I don't know who did that, but they need to be in like the Hockey Twitter Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Credit. Well, I just want to see like what we should find the person that made that. It's probably impossible. But say when you saw that, what inspired you to put, old time like ragtime band instruments in the hands of the Red Wings?
The person who did that is probably an NHL GM by now.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Dubas. Yeah, that's what he did.
He doesn't like fun.
All right, it was Kyle Davidson.
He's a miserable bastard, and you can't blame him. He's the GM in Toronto. What are you going to do? Well, Throwback Thursday and all of our Blackhawks history stuff, that is Greg's baby. And he's going to have a new post this week in Blackhawks history coming out after this episode airs live. So, in the afternoon on Thursday, every Thursday, you're going to get a look at the week ahead in Blackhawks history. And they are, Greg, last week you published yours. I'm like, this is a Bible. This is in-depth as hell. I'm seeing names I haven't thought of for years. So make sure you're on allchgo.com. Cool. And check that out after the
show.
Go
big or go home. I love I love history. I love hockey history. And I love those random names that you completely forget. Everybody remembers the Detroit series. And there's a lot of stuff this upcoming week. The entire 1992 Stanley Cup final, not that great. But it took place here in the Cup. And then the 2014 Western Conference final between the Kings and the Hawks came to an end this upcoming week. So there's a lot of great stuff. But then there's birthdays of guys you're like, oh, yeah, Brian Noonan. I remember him. Like, lots of fun stuff. I love doing it. That'll be out later this afternoon, and we'll do some fun stuff on Twitter as well to celebrate a lot of these anniversaries. And we're going to do that. I'm going to keep doing that every week, even when we get into the season. Wait till, we get into, November and December when there's lots of actual stuff to talk about. Like, pretty much these first ones are like, hey, remember these two playoff runs, because they don't play into June very often.
No,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun. So check that out. That will be up shortly after this show is done. I'm putting the bells and whistles on it as we speak.
All right. Well, let's kick it off with the 2013 Western Conference semifinal. Before we get to the series, a reminder, this was the shortened season. The Hawks got out to an historic start, just absolutely incredible off the jump. They won the President's Trophy. So they get through the first round against the Minnesota Wild. Then it's on to Detroit. And they did swat them. And then game one happens. Greg, take it away. Lead us through this by the hand, please.
Well, I mean, you got to remember the Red Wings were the seventh seed of the Western Conference. This is the last season they actually did the just 1-8 conference playoffs and then reseeded. So with the Hawks being number one, the Wings were the seventh seed, and they knocked out the number two seeded Ducks in seven games. That was back when the Ducks would take a 3-2 series lead in every series and end up losing game six at home and then losing the series. So, they lost game six on the road. But so they upset the Ducks. Red Wings Ducks, or Red Wings Hawks. I'm all about the Ducks this morning. I need more Strava.
There you go.
This was the 16th playoff meeting between these two historic franchises. The Hawks had won 8 of the previous 15, but the last time these two teams got together was at 2009 Western Conference Final, which, of course, the Red Wings won in 5 games and went on to the Stanley Cup Final. So May 15th, 2013, Game 1, Hawks, Red Wings at the United Center. And who better to score the first goal of that series was former Detroit Red Wing Marian Hossa. Gave the Hawks a 1-0 lead with a power play goal in the first period. That was quickly answered by Damian Bruner, who I forgot was a guy until I did these recaps. I remember him.
So for this last night and this morning, I went back through YouTube and just tried to find some like condensed games of these games to just kind of jog my memory. And yeah, when Bruner scored, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about him. And how much like hype was behind him when he came into the league. They were like, oh, this, you know, he was like one of the like, you know, first that I could remember, like European signings that's going to take over the league. And he did not. But yeah, I think 2013 was his first year with the Red Wings, and it was like, oh man, I forgot he like came in and was supposed to be like kind of
disappeared. And the goal he scored came less than 2 minutes after the Hossa goal. It was his third of the playoffs already, so he was producing. And then he hung out with Kim Janssen and disappeared. So it was 1-1, no scoreless second period. Then the third period, things got excited when Johnny Oduya broke the tie 8 minutes into the third period, quickly followed up by a Marcus Kruger goal. Not exactly your big guns coming out. And then Patrick Sharp with the cherry on top of a game one win with an empty net goal. That was the best thing about these dynasty teams, because yeah, you had your Hosses and your Sharps and your Taves and Kane, but then you never knew when a guy like Kruger or Oduya was going to come and score a big goal. And both of those guys, those were their second goals of the postseason. Corey Crawford made 20 saves for the victory. Jimmy Howard was busy. He gave up the 3 of the 4 goals on 41 total shots, so 38 saves for Jimmy Howard. And that was another name going through these games where I was like, oh yeah, Jimmy Howard. Like,
he had a nice long career too.
He was damn good.
Yeah. Like I said, going through some of those condensed games I was watching just to kind of jog up the highlights, I forgot, like, yeah, Jimmy Howard was real good for a stretch of time.
Stanley Cup winner, you know?
Yeah.
Really good goalie. And he was really good in this series, because as we'll get into it, he faced over 40 shots multiple times, and he kept he was a big reason this series went the way it did. Well, and that's another reason why I love doing these Throwback Thursdays in the History Post, is just to be like reminded of, like, this is only 9 years ago, but I forgot half of these Red Wings guys existed.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, after game one, like you said, Greg, they swat away the Wild. They're historically great in a regular season. They win game one in dominant fashion. A lot of people felt like it was over. And I think that includes a lot of the Blackhawks too.
Yeah.
And as longtime Blackhawks fans know, the Red Wings are like Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers. They're never dead. They're never gone. For whatever reason, they find a way to do the Undertaker sit up from the dead and come back and take it down. And it's it is, to me, it's a specifically Hawks Red Wings thing, because even in the lean years when the Hawks would get a rare 3-0 lead against the Red Wings, when Kyle Calder and Tyler Arneson were out there, they were going to lose that game 5-3. It was almost inevitable. So we'll get to it, but that's why, to me, this series in particular stood out so much, because of the symbolism behind it.
Yeah, for sure. And game two definitely was a case where it seemed like, hey, the Blackhawks thought this was in the bag, and then the Red Wings came out and beat them at the United Center 4-1. Same score, reversed order. But it started off well. Patrick Kane scored in the first period, gave the Hawks a 1-0 lead. And then after the first period, the wheels fell off. Our guy Damian Bruner scored to tie the game early in the second period. Then current Carolina Hurricane Brendan Smith, he's had some big goals in the playoffs this season. And he had the eventual game-winning goal late in the second period. The Wings added two more. Johan Franzen and Valtteri Filppula had third period goals, and it was a runaway win. And then when you look at it, the Hawks only had 20 shots on goal in the game. Jimmy Howard coming up with 19 saves. So they went from 41 shots to 20 shots in one game. And I think that kind of shows you what Jay said. Like, I think the Hawks kind of said, hey, we haven't really had to work for anything this year. Let's just throw our jerseys on the ice and get another win.
Yeah. It was definitely a flip the script moment. I remember watching that game thinking like, oh, hey, like that's not how this is supposed to go. Like, you know, watching the entire, 2013 season and going through the first six games of the postseason that they had played, it just looked like, oh, okay, they're just going to run through everybody. And we're like, okay, who are they going to meet in the final? Like that was really how it felt. And then when Detroit, flipped it in game two, it was just like, oh, okay. Like, I was not expecting, a Blackhawks team to look like that. But again, it was, still a Red Wings team that had so much firepower, and they were there for a reason, and had to remind the Blackhawks like, hey, like this is still a team that's going to be dangerous, and reminded them a few more times in that series.
As AJ in the comments points out, good observation. Jimmy Howard and Corey Crawford always struck me as kindred spirits, both very good goalies, underappreciated in their time. Absolutely, because they both were goalies for some incredible teams. You can lump Chris Osgood in that category too. Yeah. You know, when you play for amazing teams and you're not a Patrick Waugh or Marty Brodeur, a lot of people say, well, anybody could win behind that team. Right. And that's not necessarily true. I mean, sure, playing behind Nicholas Lindstrom and Chris Chelios was on some of those teams, or playing behind Seabrook and Keith and that defense. Yeah, life is easier, but you still got to make the big saves when the pressure's on. So that's a great call out by AJ there on the Howard and Crawford comparisons. So then the series shifted to Detroit, and it wasn't very good. That was a lousy trip to the Joe Louis Arena, which it's gone. It's dead. I don't care. It was a dump. I hated that arena. I went there twice and just had miserable times both times there. It had nothing to do with the games either, but good riddance, Joe Louis Arena. Game three, Red Wings 3-1 victors. They take a surprising 2-1 lead in the series. Hawks really never were in this game. Gustav Nyquist and Drew Miller. Remember Drew Miller? That's Ryan Miller's brother. 68-year-old brother. He had like gray hair by the time he was like 18, that poor bastard. Gustav Nyquist, Drew Miller, second period, 2-0. Patrick Kane gets a goal early in the third period to kind of give the Hawks some life, but then it was answered immediately, just over 2 minutes later, Pavel Datsyuk. And that's all she wrote. 3-1. Hawks, a little more life to them. They had another 40 shot effort, but Jimmy Howard came up with 39 saves in the victory, and Crawford made 27 in the losing effort. So it's 2-1. Game four back in Detroit. I mean, I don't remember. I don't remember feeling panic or dread at this point. It was just like
I did.
It was just like, what? We've been here, done that. How many times have the Hawks fallen behind 2-1 in a series and they just win in six games? They're going to go in the locker room. They're going to find the switch and they're going to flip it. And then they're just going to dominate the next three games and move on, because that's what this team does, especially that season. Like that team felt invincible during the regular season. It was just like, okay, big deal. Jimmy Howard pulled one out of his ass and, you know, enjoy your last win of the season, Red Wings. That's kind of how I remember feeling, like no big deal. And then game four happened, and then it was like, holy crap, this is not going to happen, is it? Like game four, 2-0 victory for the Red Wings again at Joe Louis Arena. Jakob Kindl. Wow. That's a blast.
There's a name.
Yeah. Woo boy. Power play goal midway through the second period was all the Red Wings needed. And then of course it was former Blackhawks legend Daniel Cleary with the empty netter that sealed the deal. 28 saves for Howard for the shutout. Crawford made 25 saves on 26 shots. But that's the Hawks are down 3-1. It's panic time. But this game is not remembered necessarily for that. This game is remembered for Brent Seabrook preventing the ultimate meltdown. As Sidney points out right here, this was the turning point of the series. And everybody on that team admitted that. Jonathan Toews hadn't scored yet in the series. Hawks offense had been terrible the last couple of games, just 2 goals in the last 3 games at that point. Toews takes a penalty. I think it was his second or third penalty of that game.
I think it was third.
Yeah, I mean, he's just having an awful night, and he is having a Jonathan Toews meltdown. We've seen it, but this was like on steroids. Brent Seabrook skates over to the penalty box, opens the door, kind of puts his head on his head and kind of just whispers in his ear and just says, hey, relax. And after the game, Seabrook said, you know, if the rest of the group sees him going like that, it's going to trickle down and we need him to be focused. We need him to be ready. And yeah, they lost that game, but that was a huge thing. And I think that shows the value of Brent Seabrook. While Jonathan Toews still wears the C on his sweater, until further notice, Brent Seabrook was the real captain.
That was the guy. Yep.
That was the guy that, like, while Toews got the title and he got to yell at the referees, it was Seabrook the team gravitated to. I'm not taking anything away from Jonathan Toews saying he's a bad captain, but it was Seabrook when that team needed the kick in the ass was the guy that in the locker room did it. He was the guy that those players looked to in these moments to pull them up.
You could always hear he had a bit of like a high pitched when he would talk loud. It was a little bit high pitched, like, let's go boys. You know, it would stand out in the locker. It wasn't that high, but it would stand out in the locker room. And if, I know not everybody has locker room access, but if you go back and watch any of those, documentary DVDs the Hawks put out after the championships,
got all three of them.
You get that access and you see Seabrook is that guy. He's greeting everybody at the door on the way in. He's the last guy out. He's fist bumping everybody. He's the vocal leader of that team. And for him to literally go into the penalty box and do like the airplane, like the shaking and the slapping in the face, you know, Jonathan Toews, like, dude, get it together. Like, we need you to win this series. And you cannot be in here pouting and slamming your stick and taking penalties because things aren't going well. This is what a true captain rises above moments like that. He doesn't fall apart in those moments. And that's Brent Seabrook saw. This dude is falling apart right now. I need to go in there and put him back together one way or another. And Greg, you said he whispered in his ear. It was a little more, I think it was a little more pronounced than that. It was a hard couple slaps on the helmet. Like, dude, come on, man. We need you. We need you to be that guy. And I'm laughing because the Dash Law says Jay was that Seabrook or Shorzy from Letterkenny. Yeah, it could be.
Give your balls a tug. Jinx.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, that's what Toews needed for sure.
Yeah. And it's such a valuable part of that run is how many players like that, like Brent Seabrook, that they had that were like, you know, you had Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp, Duncan Keith, you know, all wearing the letters, but you also had Hossa and Seabrook and Kane. And at time, you know, different times you had Dave Boland and John Madden. And like you had different guys who could step up and be leaders. And you had tons of players who went on to different teams or came from other teams that were in leadership roles. And that run that the Blackhawks had, they had so many guys that were just like, oh, they could have been a captain. They could have been captain. They could have been captain. It was just the voices and leadership of the locker room was just like, you could point to a dozen different stalls and say, yeah, this guy's gonna lead us tonight. This guy's gonna lead us tonight. It's just such a valuable aspect to that team and something that's very hard to replicate in the league.
Well, I think that's, when Kyle Davidson talks about, getting an identity to this team and having, that be part of it. It's not just, let's get a bunch of really good players. Let's get a bunch of character guys with skill. That's the challenge. There's not a lot of those. Guys like Jonathan Toews are rare. And I know we've been down on him over the last couple of years because he's been, not playing. He's put his foot in his mouth a few times. And when he has played, he hasn't been very productive. But, to find a guy who is the total package like that of leadership, offense, defense, the whole thing, it's hard to build a whole team of that. But this dynasty is about as close as you can get to that. Because you had a bunch of poor man's Jonathan Toews is on the team too, right? Like Dave Bowen didn't have the offense, but he could defend just as well. And Patrick Sharp was a winger, but he could play both ways too. Marian Hossa, like you had a bunch of guys that all played on all ends of the ice in all zones very well. And you said it earlier, Greg, with the depth, that's the thing. Like that's what made them so unstoppable. And I think that's what gave you the faith. Me, I have too much Red Wings PTSD to have felt any faith. I'm like, here we go again. Well, this is going to be their last chance to win a cup.
My faith was definitely shooken after this game. Like I was like, ugh. But to talk about that depth and the character guys, just to put a cherry on top of that conversation, that's so difficult. And that's what teams like the Maple Leafs are discovering year in and year out. Yeah, you got the stars, but do you have that extra layer? That's what the Oilers have been struggling with. You got the best player in the world and like the sixth best player in the world on your team, but it hasn't gotten you a whole lot because you don't have that missing element. And the Tampa Bay Lightning have that. They've got the stars. They've got the leaders. They've got the guys that are like, I don't care that I'm making all this money. I'm going to lay out and risk injury to block a shot in a 4-1 game. Like that's what you need. And that's what some of these star driven teams we see today are missing and they need to get, but it's not easy. It's not easy to find those guys.
All right. We're through 4 games of the 7 game series. It's about to turn, everybody. If you missed it, if you weren't alive in 2013, you're going to find out what happened next, but we want to remind everybody that the best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use the code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you'll get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000, but you're also going to get, with a $50 or more first-time deposit, a free CHGO membership. That'll get you access to all of our web content, a free t-shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker, access to our Discord, everything that comes with being a CHGO member. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making a $50 or more first-time deposit at PointsBet. It's your home for live in-play betting, and guess what? It just got even better. Introducing PointsBet's new feature, live NBA same-game parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA same-game parlay only with PointsBet. Combine your favorite bets anytime during the game, and if you want more, you can always boost your live same-game parlays. Watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. And now online sign up is available in Illinois. So grab your phone. Here's my phone. I got mine. Go on your app store, iOS store, Android store, whatever. Download the PointsBet app right now and register from start to finish, all from your phone. What are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
Well, we'll roll with PointsBet, and that means it's Thursday. Not only is that Throwback Thursday here on CHGO Blackhawks, but it's the PointsBet Play of the Week all across our CHGO network. And we've got to change strategy, and, the Panthers train no longer existed. It's gone.
The train is off the rails.
It's been blown up. It's the train from the Han Solo movie. It's gone. It no longer exists.
Awesome.
Even if the Panthers were still playing, I think we were jumping off that train anyway because we had lost 2 in a row.
Probably.
But now we're going to attach ourselves to the Connor McDavid missile. That's not a train right now. That is a full-on ballistics missile. Our PointsBet play of the week, I'm putting an anytime goal plus 135 Connor McDavid. That was a tremendous odds for Connor McDavid. He didn't score a goal last game, which means he's scoring like 9 tonight. So Connor McDavid plus 135 is the official points bet play of the week. But there's a second one to that, because if you log in your points bet app, you're going to see there's going to be a little extra $5 bonus reward there. Not sure the reason why, but okay, you're going to get a
courtesy of points bet.
Right. Hey, it's free $5 you can play with. I think it's only good for today. I took that $5 and I put it on Connor McDavid scoring the first goal of the game at plus 1,000. So if that thing pops up, it's a $55 payout on my $5 bet, which is not even my money. So even if he doesn't score the first goal, oh well. Yeah. Thanks for giving me a little bit of entertainment tonight. So Connor McDavid, we're jumping the Connor McDavid missile, plus 135 anytime goal scorer. And I say use that extra $5 you got and put it on the first goal of the game being scored by McDavid at plus 1,000.
That is a very tempting bet.
Yeah.
It's not your money.
Both of them.
Yeah. I put together I saw the $5 free bet. I put together a wild like 6-leg parlay that was like plus 5,000, and the first leg missed, and I was like, ah, damn.
Yeah,
but, you know, just whenever I get, you know, whenever points bet has some sort of promotion or whatever where it's just like, hey, take a free bet, it's just like, oh, I'm just gonna roll the dice on something crazy and just see if I can turn this free money into more free money. It didn't work out this time.
All right, we are on to game 5, Blackhawks Red Wings, and here's when things start to turn around.
And right before we do the turnaround, I just want to give a shout out to Alton V in our chat, who says he just discovered the podcast about a month ago, is a huge fan, been looking for a Blackhawks podcast, a good Blackhawks podcast. He had to settle for us, but we're doing our best. And he finally found one. Keep up the great work. Yeah.
Yeah. If we find a good one, we'll let you know. Yeah.
Right. But thank you, Alton. Those are kind words. We sure do appreciate you checking in and watching. And we're going to keep striving. We got some exciting things in the works here. So just stay tuned. And speaking of exciting, who doesn't like series comebacks? And the series came back to Chicago on May 25th, 2013. Hawks down 3-1. I still had my season tickets at this time. And I remember talking to my buddy Paul, who I had my seats with. We were like, I don't want to go and see the Red Wings like end this series. I don't want to do it. Then we said, finally, you know what? We got to go, because if this is the last game, it's the last chance to see our buddies in our section until next fall. So we went, and the place was rocking. Like it was not doom and gloom. Like people, that building was loud, and there was a lot of energy. And Brian Bickle, the legend of Brian Bickle, starts getting born here. He scored his fourth goal of playoffs. He had 3 goals in that Minnesota series. He gets his fourth one late in the first period to give the Hawks a 1-0 lead. Second period, midway through, it's that Dan Cleary guy again scoring, tying the game. But from there, the Blackhawks took control. They got back-to-back power play goals less than 3 minutes apart in the second half of that period from Andrew Shaw and Jonathan Toews. First goal of the playoffs. The monkey is off the back. It's 3-1. And then Shaw added another goal in the third period to make it 4-1. Jimmy Howard bombarded again, 45 shots on goal for the Hawks. Ooh. And then Corey Crawford only had to face 26. What an amazing, like, I forgot, like, what that was like. Mm-hmm. You outshoot a team 45-26, and you score 2 power play goals. We haven't seen that here in a long time. That used to be the norm. Yeah. That used to be what we did. The Hawks, especially that season, they always had the damn puck. And, like, we forget now it's the exact opposite. They never have the damn puck. It just – you get spoiled, and you take those things for granted.
How are you guys feeling after this game? I know, Greg, I was still a ball of nerves, man. I remember I was doing the post-game shows on the Score at the time, and I would just stay because I'm not going to go all the way home and then come back for the game. So I just had a lot of idle time to worry. And that's how I spent most of my days. Because the other part is, and hopefully someday we learn this anxiety too, of like being on the podcast or being on the air when a team loses or is eliminated. Mm. And it is the worst. It's the worst because everybody, at least on a podcast, we don't have to take live calls. We've got the chat. We don't have people calling in like, these guys suck. I hate it.
There's no Bobs from Streeter calling.
I don't know how to use the YouTubes. I'm not interested. But yes, it just so it wasn't only just the element of, oh my God, my team might be eliminated by the team I hate the most. It's that I'm going to have to, it, being as pissed and heartbroken as I'll be, I'm going to have to go on the air for 3 hours and talk about it. Mm-hmm. When the last thing I want to do is freaking talk about
go
it.
On, yeah. Yeah.
That plays a role. But I cannot wait to get back to that time where the three of us look at each other like, I don't want to talk about this after they lose.
I would much rather, have constant, just sinking feelings in my chest and gut all day, just waiting for like a 7:30 puck drop. Just like, oh, I can't take it. Like I you know, you have to think about, things to distract your mind from being like, oh God, they gotta, it's an elimination game or a game seven or something. I would much rather have those feelings back than just being like, well, Blues and Avalanche play tonight. I guess that'll be kind of entertaining. Like,
start of the night, Sam Lafferty again.
Right. Yeah. Also yeah.
We don't want to talk about losses these days just because we're tired of talking about losses, not because we're mad or defeated. Mm-hmm. I look forward to the day the three of us could be at the CHGO offices and watching a game, and the three of us can be like Matt Peck and Big Dave watching a Bulls game.
Yeah,
we just sit there and go, is it over yet?
Having the emotional investment back in the game is a big part of it.
While the Stanley Cup playoffs are still super fun to watch, but man, when you got that, like when you take years off your life expectancy because of a game, I miss that.
This gray spot. This was 2010. Yeah. This one is 2013. Yeah. Over here is 2015.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then the rest is my daughter.
That'll do it to you.
Yeah. This is all. I don't know. Anywho, game six. Like as you asked, like I was feeling kind of confident. I wasn't feeling dreadful, but I was still very nervous. I knew game six, winning in Detroit, was going to be hard. They hadn't won there yet. I knew. I felt if they obviously they have to win game six, but I felt if they win game six, there's no way they're losing game seven at home. So this was series for me. And they went up there and they beat the Red Wings 4-3 in a very tense,
tight,
very good game. First period, it was Hossa again, a power play goal less than 4 minutes into the game. Jonathan Toews had the primary assist, Hossa's fifth goal of the playoffs already. You felt good, but then just before the end of the period, just over a minute left, another guy I completely forgotten existed, Patrick Eaves, scored his first goal of the playoffs to tie the game, assisted by Drew Miller and Brendan Smith. So you talk about your role players stepping up in a big game. That right there, that's not your Datsyuk and Franzens. That's your guys, your fourth liners coming up with a huge goal. And then second period, Joakim Andersson, I don't remember him at all. Not at all, but he scored put the Hawks up 2-1 midway through the second period. And that held into the third period, and it was like, uh-oh, like this can't be happening. This was the team with the greatest regular season we've ever seen. They weren't supposed to do this. Like, and then you get all the people with the nonsense of the President Trophy curse. It's like, that has nothing to do with anything, but like, this is not good. And then 51 seconds into the third period, one of my favorite Blackhawks of all time, Michael Hanzus, a guy that a lot of people laughed about that acquisition at the trade deadline. Like, what are we doing here? Like, at least let him grow back the mullet that he had the first time. He scores probably the biggest goal of his career. Puts the Hawks, ties the game 2-2, 51 seconds in that third piece. I loved Michael Hanzus. He was like perfect for that team. Exactly what they needed.
Yep.
Need a face off? Here you go.
Yep.
Need a big goal? Here you go.
And, Michael Hanzus wasn't a quantity guy when it came to goals. It was quality goals. It seems like he always had – all his goals seem to be important. He reminds me, to make a cross-sports reference, he was like Joe Creedy. Joe Creedy never had a really high batting average, but it seemed that every time he got a hit, it was like the hit you needed. And that was Michael Hanzus, especially in that year he scored the big goals. And that got the ball rolling. 5 minutes later, it was Brian Bickell again, his fifth goal of the playoffs. And then Just a couple minutes after that, it was that Michael Frolik penalty shot. Put the Hawks up 4-2, 10 minutes to go in the game. Everything was going the Hawks' way at this point. Now it's like, this is what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, here it is. We got them right where we want them. Detroit sucks, all that stuff. It felt great. And 52 seconds left in the game, Damian Bruner, man, this guy was a pain in the ass this series, wasn't it? He gets the Wings to within a goal with 52 seconds. And then, you know, then the buttholes start to clench a little tense.
Like, oh,
shit, what are we doing now? But they held off for the last 52 seconds to get the win. Crawford had a huge game, 35 saves in that game. Jimmy Howard probably had the worst game of his series, as the Hawks only had 28 shots on goal, but he allowed four of them in. So maybe, you know, they've starting to wear him down a little bit. That's what you're thinking. Like, hey, maybe all those 40 shot games are starting to have their effect. Maybe the pressure is getting on to him. You know, all the pressure was on the Hawks in this series, especially when they fell behind 3-1. You know, this is the historic team, and here you are losing to the seventh seed. And now it's one game for it all. Mm-hmm. Back to the United Center, May 29th. The anniversary is coming up just in a couple of days. Man, this game, I remember going to this game and that building, my God, I don't know what it was. I don't know what the feeling was. It was intense. It was nervous. There was confidence, but it was just like every time the puck went into either zone, you just rose in your seat a little
bit.
Didn't matter who had the puck. When it crossed the blue line, you just tensed up like, oh shit, what's going to happen?
Well, for me, part of it was, you know, you felt like game five, the Hawks look like they're supposed to look, right? It's a dominant victory. They're back in the series, whatever. Then game six, they win game six, of course, right? But like, it wasn't as convincing as you'd hoped. You had Corey Crawford, like you said, played really well. You had Jimmy Howard play not so great. So you're like, God, if Jimmy Howard is the Jimmy Howard he's been, they probably don't win this game. And if Crawford doesn't stand on his head, they probably don't win this game. And then it's like, Detroit's this team with all this experience, right? And the Hawks won a cup in 2010 before this, of course. But game seven all day was just nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
I was pacing downtown. Walking back, like I went and hung out in the Blackhawks store for like 45 minutes. And I'm like, are you okay, sir? I'm like, no. No, I'm not really okay. I just need an adult. Yeah, like maybe if I buy something, it will be karma. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what the hell to do. It was just the most – I think this was the most stress I felt before a game in the entire dynasty. All day. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. It was just torture. It was torture leading up to that game.
The Hawks had a lot of game sevens in that dynasty run. And this was definitely the one I felt the most, just everything about anxious, nervous, didn't know what would happen. You know, that Canucks game in 2011, not even close to this, because again, this was the team that was not supposed to lose. And we cannot lose to the damn Red Wings. We can't do it. We'll never hear the end of it. This is their last. They're moving to the Eastern Conference next season. We can't let them do this. All those Red Wings implants in Downers Grove will never let us hear the end of this. Like, we've got to win this game. And, man, the energy in that building was just absolutely incredible. Scoreless first period. It just builds up the nerves and the intensity. God. And then a minute into the second period, it's Patrick Sharp, his seventh goal of the playoffs from Hossa and Hanzus. And the place just went absolutely bananas. That holds up through the period. It's 1-0 going into the third period. You're feeling pretty good, but you're like, man, we need to get another one here. And then disaster strikes 26 seconds into the third period. It's Hank Zetterberg tying the game. And you're just like, oh my God. Like, he could have literally just walked through the United Center and punched everybody right in the stomach after scoring that goal. Cause that's what it felt like. It was just, oh man, we can't. And then, well, we all know how that ended, and nearing the end of regulation, we think of all people, it's Nicholas Jarmelson wins the game with a slap shot goal or puts them up late in the game. And just the place exploded. But then it doesn't count. It's waved off because there was a penalty behind the play. And it's like, what are you doing? I remember being in my seats in section 321 and just losing my mind because there was never an explanation. Like, we had no idea what was going on. And it was,
And the broadcast was equally as confused. And you could see that, like, their producers must have been searching, like, every camera angle. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Such a ticky-tack behind the play. Nothing to do with the play happening.
And they called Jarmelson for a penalty for allowing himself to get thrown to the ice, essentially.
No, it was Brandon Saad.
Oh, yeah, Saad. Okay, yeah.
Saad, and I can't remember the Red Wings player.
I think it was Justin Abdicator sticks in
was
my head.
Was it Abdicator?
I don't know if that's
I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like that would have been
two guys that were jumping on or off the ice, got tangled up in the bench, and they decided to have a hug fest, and then they call penalties. It had nothing to do with the play. And it happens as Jarmelson's shooting the shot and scoring the goal. I believe that was a Tim Peel call, who, was politely told to no longer referee games a few years later, and he's out on Twitter being Tim Peel. So, that just was like crap. So the goal doesn't count. All that energy gets sucked out, and we got to go to overtime. Overtime of Game 7, season on the line. Hated Red Wings.
And the torturous part of NHL playoff overtime is you have to wait for an intermission for the overtime to start. So it's like 15 minutes. You're just sitting there like, someone please, can this put me out of my misery? Like, I'm so upset right now. I need someone to hold me. Like, it was just the most torturous feeling. And then to have the elation of the Jarmelson goal and then the deflation of it didn't count. It was almost unreal. And as a fan, you're thinking they can't recover like that. There's too much damage done. Very similar, by the way, to the Cubs World Series, right? Like, kind of the same thing. Like, they had it in hand. They were good to go. And at the last minute, it's taken away. And then you got to wait through a rain delay. And that's torture. Like, it's just, there's so many similarities there. But oh my God, that intermission was just torture.
It was. Go ahead, Mara. Sorry.
Well, I just always remember back in this time frame, me and my buddy Nate, who has popped up in the chat a couple times. We were home from college, and we would watch the games together. We started this ritual of watching the games at my house with my parents and friends and everything. And in overtime games, what we started to do was, and this is how 23-year-old Mario, my brain and thought that this would be a superstition would work. I had a punching bag in my basement, and we would we would go down into our basement in the intermissions, and we would just punch the punching bag just to get out some frustration, and then we would chug a beer and then go back and watch the overtime, and we would do that for all the overtime. So it was this one, it was it was all the overtimes against against the Ducks back in the day. So it was a superstition. It worked sometimes, it other times it didn't, but I remember doing it for this game, and just it's just a stupid memory I have, but I always remember doing something like that. And it was like actually like, okay, there's a ton of stress right now because it's overtime, it's game 7. The game should have been over, and it was just like, I remember being down there just punching the punching bag and being like, this game should be over. like just getting so angry on it. But yeah, it was just, it's just that feeling of this, the game could be over at any second. Now the series could be over at any second. Season could be over. And it was just, I just have that memory of being at my parents' place watching the game. And it's just, it was just crazy.
When I think, when I talk about what we're about to talk about being my favorite memory of the dynasty is because of that suddenness of it, right? The Hawks won their cups all in game sixes. So even if they had lost those games, they still had another chance to come back and win the cup, but this one was, if Pavel Datsyuk or Henrik Zetterberg gets a puck and shoots it and it hits a skate and goes in, it's over. Mm-hmm. It's over. And this great series in this great team. They get off to an incredible historic start, and you don't know another cup is coming in 2015, right? With the uncertainty of the hard cap, you don't know who's coming, who's going, etc. It kind of felt like, if not now, it's never going to happen again. And it was just a second away from all being swept away like that, especially your win one game one convincingly. Then you're down 3-1, right? And then all of a sudden, now it comes to game seven. And not just that, overtime in game seven. And not just that, the dragon you haven't slayed in the Detroit Red Wings, who have been a thorn in your side for the better part of 20 years. It was just, oh my God, the stress of this overtime was insane. That's why I'm very glad it did not last very long.
And as AJ corrected me in the comments, it was Stephen Walkham that made the back call, not Tim Peel. I get my bad referees confused. I'm sorry.
It's easy to do.
My apologies kind of sort of to Tim Peel.
Walkham was also – what was he?
He had a run there where he made some really atrocious calls, and they were like, yeah, we're not going to let you on the ice anymore.
Wasn't he in the Blackhawks Yotes series the year before? And had a terrible call, like he didn't call a penalty on Torres or something.
That sounds right. Or maybe he was the one that made the charging call on Andrew Shaw when Mike Smith completely flopped.
Yeah, it might have been.
You're right. No, it was Stephen Walkham. I got to find an old tweet here from Chris Cook.
There you go.
April 25th, 2012. NHL quote punishes referee Stephen Walkham for missing Rafi Torres's hit on Marian Hossa by letting him work game seven of Caps Bruins. So there was no punishment at all. Yeah, but yeah, right. Totally missed that call.
And then they made him the head of officials, I believe, afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, you're the worst guy. Who better to run the whole group of you?
It's like the player safety thing we talked about.
Yeah, it's a trend in the NHL. Exactly.
Who's right. The most violent bastard we can find? You're the head of player safety now. Congratulations. Yeah.
Did you? How many Rolling Stones tweets did you have to go through to find that one from Chris Cook?
Several thousand.
Hey, that's all right. Chris Cook, one of the good guys. I always enjoyed my chats with him. So overtime. And thankfully, we didn't have to wait very long. Just 3 minutes, 35 seconds in the overtime. Brent Seabrook gets the puck at the blue line. And for whatever reason, nobody in a white jersey decided to go anywhere near him.
Yeah.
He could have literally taken off his skates and walked into the shooting area and shot the puck. Shoots what you're just like, okay, wrist shot. And for what, and then Jimmy Howard, like, just can't grab it. It somehow gets by him. It wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but God darn it, it felt so good. The greatest goal that I've seen, I'm going to say second grade. I still love the Marian Hossa goal against Nashville in 2010 better.
Pretty good.
This one was so satisfying. Mm-hmm. And it's Brent Seabrook, the guy, the leader, the man that we just talked about that went to the penalty box and told his captain to calm the F down and let's go. And it's so – you couldn't have written a script better that it's Seabrook that scores the goal. And then you look at the two guys that got the assists on that play. It's Dave Bolin, it's Michael Frolik in overtime of game seven. Like that, again, is what made that team so special, that you had guys like that, that you're putting out there early in an overtime. They're not out there because it's 15 minutes in overtime and all your stars are tired and you have to throw them out in the shift. They put them out there because that shift started in the defensive end of the ice. They got the puck, they moved it up the ice, and there's Brent Seabrook, right place, right time. Boom, series over. I believe Lawrence has the famous picture of Brent Seabrook shouting to the heavens.
That was also
that was every Blackhawks fan. Every
it was
Black
an
Hawks
amazing
fan.
Moment. Yeah. It is burned into my memory as a Blackhawks fan. The jubilation in the crowd that night. Yeah, just walking out and high fiving and hugging strangers and just it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And it was like when the Bulls finally beat the Detroit Pistons. It was like, I mean, yeah, the Hawks had won in 2010, but all we heard from Red Wings fans was you didn't have to beat us. You didn't go through us. Mm-hmm. At that time, the Red Wings were just on the end of they were just about ready for their down tick, but they were still the standard for so many years. They knocked us out in 2009. and it was so nice to finally, after all those years between the 90s and the early 2000s and up to 2009, when they were dominating the Hawks, and we had to take it on the chin from all the Red Wing fans that lived in the Chicago area, either, you know, people that moved here from Michigan after college or people that just, you know, jumped on the bandwagon because the Hawks were bad. We finally could be like, yeah, now we beat you. And now we're going to move on and now get out of our conference.
Get out of here. That's a great way to
go to the East, you bums.
Yeah, I mean, they still had some decent seasons after that. But then, yeah, the collapse began really like 2016, 2017 is when it started really going downhill. So there's your timeline, Hawks fans. The Wings go from 93 points in 2015-16 to 79 to 73 to 74 to 39. Oh. I mean, and they're finally starting to tick back up. Yeah. They hit with some really great draft picks and guys that are really making a difference. And they've kept their young leadership and Dylan Larkin. This is stuff we'll kind of talk about. We talk about DeBrincat and things like that as the offseason goes on. But these rebuilds take time.
Speaking of Dylan Larkin real quick, did you see he changed agents?
No.
Yeah, changed agents, and he's negotiating an extension this summer, or is potentially negotiating an extension this summer. Changed agents. So that's interesting for a Red Wing storyline to watch.
Yeah, see what happens. He's one of those guys that it goes to show that patience mm-hmm. when it comes to your young players, because I think there was a lot of times early in his career where Red Wings fans were just like, I don't know about this guy. Yeah, he's fast and he could score, but I don't see the consistency. And there was a lot of, you know, hey, can we trade this guy? And now he's their captain and just a fantastic player. So patience goes a long way when you're trying to do it the right way. So keep mm-hmm. that in mind over the next 4 or 5 seasons.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and you talk about a guy like doing it himself. You know what I mean? Like for a long time.
For a while.
He was basically it.
Mm-hmm. Him and Anthony Mantha, they were the two young only attractions for the Red Wings. But yeah, they're going back in the right direction. Took some time, took a lot of top end picks to work out. But you know, that's a team that I know we just spent 50 minutes burying them through the retrospective of the series. But that's a that's a team that you look at as like a rebuilding structure, rebuilding plan, and kind of the experience of rebuilding. And that could be a route that the Blackhawks are going to be going down in the next couple of seasons. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's to close the series here. You think about if it goes the other way, if the Red Wings score the overtime winner and that, that season ends in the semifinals. Where do the Blackhawks go from there? Because now it's not we have two cups. It's all the success of the President's Trophy, two cups in 4 years, and everything's going in the right direction. If they're out in the second round, it's Stanley Cup in 2010, first round exit, second round exit. Like, is you wonder what the domino effect could have been if there were any panicky moves that needed to be made, or people start questioning Joel Quenneville, or it's very interesting. But they close out the series. They the next time they ever see the Red Wings in the postseason would be in the Cup final. And leave it at that.
It's so fun to do these, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it too, because there's so much of it you forget. And like you said, Craig, you're naming all these old Red Wings when DTRT launches someday. And this week in Blackhawks and Red Wings history comes up, and you're going to see all these names of these dudes you have not thought of before or since. Joakim Andersen, Jakob Kindle. The ever-gray Drew Miller. That's what's so fun about these throwbacks. Of course, it's great to relive the memories, but just like, remember this dude? Remember that dude? Remember that goal Michael Hanzu scored that you probably haven't thought of in, in years, that was so huge? And like Mario said, probably the biggest of his career was just another footnote in the three Stanley Cups. And, man, I like thinking back on Michael Hanzu too. Like, that's a guy who he kind of was punchline because he was slow and he was big and he was old and just I don't know, everyone wanted the Hawks to like add another superstar at the deadline. And the only time they really came close to that was when they got Antoine Fournette. Would you say it's probably the highest profile, like deadline addition they made? I would think so, right? In terms of like,
maybe Oduya.
Oduya, yeah, is probably, those two are probably like similar levels of player when you compare to a D-man.
Mostly it was guys like Sammy Paulson or, you know,
right.
You know, it was,
and Hanzus is what they wanted Paulson to be,
right?
Right, come in
that play. Fourth line center that wins faceoffs, can play defense, kill penalties, and then maybe every once in a while score a huge goal for you.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and Hanzus jumped in, and he became the second line center because him, you know, he played so well with Patrick Kane at that time, and you didn't expect that to happen.
No.
How funny that was the thing forever with the Hawks was. The number two center was just always a thing that seemed to be the one thing they couldn't find a permanent answer for, but they did a hell of a job addressing it. Hanzus twice and Vermette once.
Mm-hmm. Hanzus, Vermette, Brad Richards.
Brad Richards. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
It was Brad Richards was plug and play some guys, you know?
Yeah. They were just waiting for Dylan Strome to be born and drafted and traded.
Yeah, right. But Brad Richards, that's a name. Like, just has totally slipped my mind.
Totally
forgot
about that until we'll be doing a 2015 Throwback Thursday, I'm sure, soon. Those anniversaries are coming up, too. Mm-hmm, so
awesome. Greg, thank you for all the hard work on this. Thanks for getting everything together. You must have had your foot green this morning. That's the only, explanation.
It's the best way to start your day other than a cup of Strava coffee. Hey, you know what? You can put them together and really just blast your system with just all the good stuff, all the good stuff. Athletic Greens, their AG1 product. It is packed with vitamins and nutrients, 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Good way to start your day. Blended together to improve your immune system, give you some more natural energy, help with your gut health. Tons of benefits to Athletic Greens and their AG1 product. And it's pretty good to incorporate into your diet, whether it's, gluten-free or dairy-free or vegan, paleo, keto, like all of those, it's easy to incorporate. And no matter how busy your day can be or how busy your life is, all you got to do is put one scoop of AG1 into a glass of water once a day. That's it. You don't have to do a whole, vitamins regimen or anything like that. Really easy to do. Just a small habit with big benefits. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with the convenient daily nutrition of Athletic Greens. You don't need, a bunch of different pills or supplements to get the benefits from Athletic Greens. Just one scoop in a cup of water. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOBlackhawks. That is athleticgreens.com/CHGOBlackhawks to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.